Passion.
When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." Then the chief priests and elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they schemed to arrest Jesus secretly and to kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or there may be a riot among the people. While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which he poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. "Why this waste?" they asked. "This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor." Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing for me. The poor you will always have with you, but you do not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly, truly I tell you, whenever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, "What are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you?" So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver, and from then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Where do you want us to make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" And he replied, "Go into the city to a certain man and tell him, 'The teacher says, my appointed time is near. I am going to celebrate the Passover with my disciples at your house.'" So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them and prepared the Passover. When evening came, Jesus was reclining at the table with the 12, and while they were eating, he said, "Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me." They were very sad, and they began to say to him one after the other, "Surely you don't mean me, Lord." And Jesus replied, "The one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. The Son of Man will go, just as it is written about him. But woe to that man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better for him if he had not been born." Then Judas, the one who would betray him, said, "Surely you don't mean me, Rabbi." And Jesus answered, "You have said so." While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I said, no, don't let me get choked up. I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you at my Father's kingdom." When they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus told them, "This very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Peter replied, Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Truly, I tell you, Jesus answered, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. But Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the other disciples said the same. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. And he took Peter and the 2 sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. And then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Couldn't you keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter. Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away for a second time and prayed. My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, then may your will be done. And when he came back again, he found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. And so he left them and went away once more and prayed the 3rd time, saying the same thing. And then he returned to the disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come. The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. And while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. And with him was a large crowd, armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. And now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. And going at once to Jesus, Judas said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. And Jesus replied, do what you came for, friend. Then the men stepped forward and seized Jesus and arrested him. And with that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, and he drew it out, and he struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Put your sword back in its place, Jesus said to him, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you not think I can call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen this way? In that hour, Jesus said to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place, that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples deserted him and fled. Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest, and he entered and he sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, 2 came forward and declared, this I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days. Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and he said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need more witnesses? Look, now you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" "He is worthy of death," they answered. They spit in his face and struck him with their fists, and others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you?" Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. "You also were with Jesus of Galilee," she said. But he denied it before them all. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. Then he went to the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." And he denied it again with an oath, "I don't know the man." And after a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away." Then he began to call down curses and swore to them, "I don't know the man." Immediately, a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, "Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times." And he went outside and he wept bitterly. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made their plans how to have Jesus executed. So they bound him and led him away and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and he returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priest and the elders. I have sinned," he said, "for I have betrayed innocent blood." "What is that to us?" they replied. "That is your responsibility." So Judas threw the money into the temple and left, and he went away and hanged himself. The chief priests picked up the coins and said, "It is against the law to put this into the treasury, since it is blood money." So they decided to use the money to buy the potter's field and burial place as a burial place for foreigners. That is why it has been called the Field of Blood to this day. Then what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. They took the 30 pieces of silver, the price set on him by the people of Israel, and they used them to buy the potter's field, as the Lord commanded me. Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "You have said so," Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony they are bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now, it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time, they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message, "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priest and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. Barabbas, they answered. What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called the Messiah? Pilate asked. And they all answered,
crucify.
Why? What crime has he committed? Asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder,
crucify.
When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood, he said. It is your responsibility. And all the people answered. Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus to the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him, and they stripped him and put on a scarlet robe on him and twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. And they put a staff in his right hand, and they knelt in front of him and mocked him. Hail, King of the Jews, they said, and they spit on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. And after they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him, and they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall, but after tasting it, he refused to drink it. And when they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over them. Above his head, they placed a written charge against him. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. And those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from that cross if you are the Son of God. In the same way, the chief priests and teachers of the law and elders mocked him. He saved others, they said, but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. If he trusts in God, let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, I am the Son of God. And in the same way, the rebels who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. From noon until 3 PM, darkness came over all the land. About 3 PM, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some of those standing there heard this, they said, he's calling Elijah. Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge, and he filled it with wine vinegar. And he put it on the staff and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, no, leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him. And when Jesus cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open, and the bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. And they came out of their tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and they exclaimed, surely this was the Son of God. Many women were there watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs, and among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph and the mother of Zebedee's sons. As evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. And going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body, and Pilate ordered that it be given to him. Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and placed it in his own new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance of the tomb, and he went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite the tomb. The next day, the one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. "Sir," they said, "we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead." This last deception would be worse than the first. "Take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go and make the tomb as secure as you know how." And so they went and made the tomb secure by putting the seal on the stone and posting the guard.
He saved others, but could not save himself. That's what the crowds shout at Jesus. Hearing that, there's today, Good Friday is more like an image than like this word-based thing. We hear it, but we visualize it and take it in. And I always find preaching on Good Friday, one sense, kind of worthless in the sense of you hear that story, and any attempt to explain that or to make it make sense in this moment and in this time just seems to fall short. As we've been going through Matthew's gospel, his interpretation for what happens to him is the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Similar to what Jeremy read to us from Isaiah, this way in which he takes on everything for us and to give him life as a ransom for many. This cross, this moment of suffering is this giving away, and it's oddly also his service. He came not to be served, but to serve. The words of the Nicene Creed, it says that Jesus came down for us and for our salvation. All of this is for us and for our salvation. The cross then becomes this sort of bringing us back to God. Theologian Robert Jensen was very firm that, like, if you were to say anything about the cross within the frame of the Gospels, not using much else, you would say that this is God's journey to bring us back to God's heart and to heal our own hearts in the process. To bring about that healing within us, to take that on. And then we see glory on the other side of it. I've been listening to the Lectio 365, I think is the name of this prayer app, every evening on a walk. And every evening, a lady in a very soft voice says, Lent is the season the Orthodox Church calls a bright sadness. The season, bright sadness. So there's this brightness that we're awaiting, but there's this deep sadness, too, that comes into it. As I was thinking about the words Good Friday, you know, in English, the way we hear good today is like, what's good about Good Friday? And there are clever answers. It could mean more Holy Friday. But anyways, this is this bright sadness. Because if there is no Sunday that we're awaiting, then none of us would be here. Jesus, in the words of one person, would just be another dead Jew. But because we await that brightness, there's more to the story than that. And so what we heard this passing around of Jesus. This is a John Milbank. Who then really killed Jesus, and why? And why did Jesus submit to this? The only consistent thread in these narratives is that Christ was consistently handed over or abandoned to another party. Judas betrayed his presence. The disciples deserted him. The Sanhedrin gave him up to Pilate. Pilate again to the mob, who finally gave him over to a Roman execution, which somehow improperly they co-opted. Even in his death, Jesus was still being handed back and forth as if no one actually killed him, but he died from neglect and the lack of his own living space. I mentioned this in one of the sermons, is that we have hot violence and sort of soft violence. And Jesus, you see in the crowd that sort of hot violence, but then we have this sort of bureaucratic violence that Jesus dies from too, as he's just handed from place to place. And following the thread that they have here is first, Jesus goes to all these places and doesn't really find anything for him there. His friends, for instance, one betrays him, the others can't stay awake for him. His friends don't find, I was thinking of the phrase handed over, Jesus particularly all that useful or worth hanging on to at this moment, not even staying awake for. Peter betrays him three times. Judas finds that the money he's even given for that betrayal is worthless itself. Jesus is then invited into the religious realm, the Sanhedrin, and they too just sort of hand him over. They question him, they prod him, but only find that worth pushing out, the extinguishment of this divine light, the only thing that he's worth. Next, he goes to the political realm. The political realm, Jesus is always silent in a way. And we have this phrase, speaking truth to power. And if you were to look at the life of Jesus at this moment, you would say he failed the test of speaking truth to power or succeeded drastically by not speaking at all and by showing it for the mockery that it is. I was talking to Ray after church about Palm Sunday sort of as this satire of the political. Like he kind of empties these things of their significance and meaning. The ecstasy of the crowd that shouts for him. They don't find much there either. Crucify him, as we said too. The president of my seminary, Dan Allender, said that he knows the power and the pleasure of being in the crowd, so much so that he would have shouted Barabbas with them. We all sort of have this way of falling to the crowd's temptations. Crowds tend to be more dangerous than we think they are because we lose ourselves sort of in the fervor and the energy and find ourselves caught up in saying things just because everybody else is going along with it. We lose our individual identity and shout together, crucify him. The crowd doesn't find much use for him. And then the army gambles for his clothes, which seems like a new low point in the course of your life. And on top of that, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom, spoken from when the criminals, is not in Matthew's gospel. And so really, it's the two like bottom of societies. He's gone to everywhere. Two other people getting crucified mock him. Like they don't even have the time to do much more than that. So from top, from the governor, all the way to the bottom of society, it seems like everybody has found a way to sort of not have anything to do with Jesus. He's pushed out of every sphere, it seems. We know as he raises, he claims all of them. But Fulton Sheen, who I've been listening to lately, says he walks through the intensive care ward of the whole world like a giant sponge, absorbing every wounded member. Jesus walks through the intensive care ward of the entire world like a giant sponge, absorbing every wounded member. As he touches all these different realms, he absorbs all that guilt, all that anger, all that brokenness, all that pushing out himself. And in that, where we began, he brings us back as a ransom. He restores us. I was thinking on my walk before this about that line in Hebrews that for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. As heavy as the day is, as hard as hearing the story is, there was the joy before him of bringing back the captives who are us, captive to our own patterns of violence, captive to our own crowds, captive to our own pleasures, captive to all these own things, that he gives himself as a ransom for that, so that we can be brought back to his kingdom. So he's laid in the grave, and we await what comes next. Let us pray. God, we come together in this season of bright sadness on Good Friday. We heard the story of what happens when your son takes up residency in the world and how every realm of our life tries to push him out. But in that way, you take all that on. You bring about our healing so that we may be captive to you, your ransom for many. Amen.